the doors then, probably none of the rest would have happened. But Caleb had released the brake. The weights were dropping, picking up speed as they slipped down the chains. The door's opening was now ordained by the simple fact of gravity. Peter grabbed hold of the wheel. Behind and above him he heard the shouts, the volley of bolts unleashed from their crosses, the pinging footsteps of watchers racing down the ladders into the staging ground. More hands appeared, fastening onto the wheel. Ben Chow and Ian Patal and Dale Levine. With excruciating slowness, it began to turn in the opposite direction. But it was too late. Of the three virals, only one made it through the doors. But that was enough. He headed straight for the sanctuary. Hollis was the first to reach the building, just as the viral vaulted to the roof. It crested the roof's apex like a stone skipping on water and dropped into the interior courtyard. As he tore through the front door, Hollis heard a crash of breaking glass inside. He reached the big room at the same instant Mausami did, the two of them arriving by different hallways onto opposite sides of the room. Mausami was unarmed. Hollis had his cross. An unexpected silence met them. Hollis had braced himself for screams and chaos, the children running everywhere. But nearly all were still in their beds, their eyes wide with terrified incomprehension. A few had managed to scramble under their cots. As Hollis crossed the threshold, he detected a flurry of movement from the nearest row, as one of the three J's, June or Jane or Juliet, rolled off her bed and scurried beneath it. The only light in the room came from the broken window, its shade ripped and hanging kitty-corner, still quivering with movement. The viral was standing over Dora's crib.
"Hey!"
Mausami yelled. She waved her arms above her head.
"Hey, look over here!"
Where was Lee? Where was Teacher? The viral jerked its face toward the sound of Mausami's voice. It blinked its eyes, tipping its head to the side on its long neck. A wet, clicking sound rose from somewhere in the taut curve of its throat.
"Over here!"
Hollis yelled, following Mausami's lead and waving to draw the creature's attention.
"Yeah, look this way!"
The viral spun toward him, facing him squarely. Something was glinting at the base of its neck, some kind of jewelry. But there was no time to wonder about this. Hollis had his angle, his opening. Lee entered the room then. She'd been sleeping in the office and heard nothing. As Lee broke into a scream, Hollis aimed the crossbow and fired. A good shot. A clean shot. Dead center on the sweet spot. He felt its rightness, its perfection, the instant it leapt from the stock. And in the split second of the arrow's flight, a distance of fewer than 5 meters, he knew. The glinting key on the lanyard. The look of mournful gratitude in the viral's eyes. The thought came to Hollis fully formed, a single word that arrived on his lips at the same instant that the arrow, the merciful, awful, unrecallable arrow, struck home in the center of the viral's chest.
Arlo.
Hollis had just killed his brother. Sarah, though she did not remember this and never would, first learned about the Walker in a dream. A confusing and unpleasant dream in which she was a little girl again. She was making Johnny cake. The kitchen where she worked, she was standing on a stool, beating the heavy batter in a wide wooden bowl, was both the kitchen of the house where she lived and the kitchen in the sanctuary. And it was snowing. A gentle snow that did not fall from the sky, because there was no sky, but seemed to appear out of the air before her face. Strange, the snow. It almost never snowed, and certainly not indoors, that Sarah could recall. But she had more important things to worry about. It was the day of her release. Teacher would come for her soon, but without the Johnny cake, she would have nothing to eat in the outside world. In the outside world, Teacher had explained to her, that was the only thing people ate. Then there was a man. It was Gabe Curtis. He was sitting at the kitchen table before an empty plate. "Is it ready?" he he asked Sarah, and then, turning to the girl sitting next to him, said, I always liked Johnny Cake. Sarah wondered, with vague alarm, who this girl was. She tried to look at her, but somehow could not see her. Wherever Sarah looked for her was always the very spot the girl had just departed, and the fact reached her mind, slowly and then all at once, that she was in a new place now. She was in the room teacher had brought her to, the place of the telling, and her parents were there, waiting. They were standing at the door. Go with them, Sarah, Gabe said. It's time for you to go. Run and keep on running. But you're dead, said Sarah, and when she looked at her parents, she saw that where their faces should have been were regions of blankness, as if she were viewing them through a current of water. Something was wrong with their necks. There was a pounding sound now, without the room, and the sound of a voice calling her name. You're all dead. Then she was awake again. She had fallen asleep in a chair by the cold hearth. It was the door that had awakened her. Someone was outside, calling her name. Where was Michael? What time was it?
Sarah, open up!
Caleb Jones? She opened the door as he was reaching to hit it again, his fist freezing in the air.
We need a nurse.
The boy was breathing hard.
Someone's been shot.
She was instantly awake, reaching for her kit on the table by the door.
Who? Leash brought her in.
Leash?
Leash is shot?
Caleb shook his head, still trying to catch his breath.
Not her. The girl.
What girl? His eyes were amazed.
She's a walker, Sarah.
By the time they reached the infirmary, the sky beyond the lights had begun to pale. No one was there, which struck her as strange. From what Caleb had told her, she'd expected a crowd. She mounted the steps and rushed into the ward. Lying on the nearest cot was a girl. She was lying face up, the bolt still embedded in her shoulder. A dark shape was pinned beneath her back. Alicia was standing over her, her jersey spattered with blood.
Sarah, do something, Alicia said.
Sarah moved quickly forward and eased her hand behind the girl's neck to check her airway. The girl's eyes were closed. Her breathing was rapid and shallow, her skin cool and clammy to the touch. Sarah felt her neck for a pulse. Her heart was banging like a bird's.
She's in shock. Help me roll her over.
The bolt had entered the girl's left shoulder just below the spoon-shaped curve of her clavicle. Alicia wedged her hands under the girl's shoulders while Caleb took her feet, and together they eased the girl onto her side. Sarah retrieved a pair of scissors and sat behind her to cut the blood-soaked knapsack away, then the girl's flimsy T-shirt, snipping it at the neck and tearing the rest of it free, revealing the slender frame of an early adolescent. The small, curving buds of her breasts and her pale skin. The bolt's barbed tip was poking through a star-shaped wound just above the line of her scapula.
I have to clip this off. I'll need something bigger than these shears.
Caleb nodded and ran from the room. As he passed through the curtain, Sue Ramirez rushed in. Her long hair had come undone. Her face was streaked with dirt. She stopped abruptly at the foot of the cot.
I'll be goddamn. She's just a kid. Where the hell is Other Sandy? Sarah demanded.
The woman appeared dazed.
Where on earth did she come from?
Sue, I'm all alone in here.
Where's Sandy?
Sue lifted her face, focusing on Sarah.
She's in the sanctuary, I think.
Footsteps and voices, a buzz of commotion from without. The outer room was filling with onlookers now.
Sue, get these people out of here.
Sarah lifted her voice to the curtain.
Everybody out! I want this building cleared now!
Sue nodded and darted outside. Sarah checked the girl's pulse again. Her skin appeared to have taken on a faintly mottled appearance, like a winter sky on the edge of snow.
How old was she?
14? What was a 14-year-old girl doing out in the dark? She turned to Alicia.
You brought her in?
Alicia nodded.
Did she say anything to you? Was she alone?
God, Sarah. Her eyes seemed to float.
I don't know.
Yes, I think she was alone. Is that blood yours or hers? Alicia dropped her eyes to the front of her jersey, seeming to notice the blood for the first time. Hers, I think. More commotion from without the room, and Caleb's voice yelling, "Coming through!" He burst through the curtain, waving a heavy cutter, and thrust it into Sarah's hands. A greasy old thing, but it would do. Sarah poured spirits over the blades of the cutter and then her hands, wiping them dry on a rag. With the girl still lying on her side, she used the cutters to clip the arrowhead free and poured more alcohol over everything. Then she directed Caleb to wash his hands as she had done, while she took a skein of wool from the shelf and snipped off a long piece, rolling it into a compress. "High top, when I back the bolt out, I want you to hold this against the entry wound. Don't be gentle. Press hard. I'm going to suture the other side, see if I can slow this bleeding." He nodded uncertainly. He was in over his head, Sarah knew. But the truth was they all were. Whether or not the girl survived the next few hours depended on the extent of the bleeding, how much damage there was inside. They rolled the girl onto her back again. While Caleb and Alicia braced her shoulders, Sarah took hold of the bolt and began to pull. Sarah could sense, through the bolt's metal shaft, the fibrous gristle of destroyed tissue, the clack of fractured bone. There was no way to be gentle. It was best to do it fast. With a hard tug, the bolt pulled away in a sighing gush of blood.
"Flyers! It's her!"
Sarah turned her head to see Peter standing in the doorway. What did he mean, "it's her"? As if he knew her. As if he knew who this girl was. But of course that was impossible. "Turn her on her side. Peter, help them." Sarah positioned herself behind the girl, taking up a needle and a spool of thread, and began to stitch the wound. There was blood everywhere now, pooling on the mattress, dripping onto the floor.
"Sarah, what should I do?"
Caleb's compress was sodden already.
"Just keep pressure on it."
She drew the needle through the girl's skin, pulling a stitch taut.
"I need more light over here, someone."
3 stitches, 4, 5, each one pulling the edges of the wound together. But it was no use, she knew. The bolt must have nicked the subclavian artery. That's where all the blood was coming from. The girl would be dead within minutes.
14 years old, Sarah thought. Where did you come from?
"I think it's stopping," Caleb said. Sarah was tying off the last stitch.
"That can't be right. Just keep pressure on it."
"No, really. Look for yourself."
They rolled the girl onto her back again, and Sarah pulled the sodden compress aside. It was true. The bleeding had slowed. The entry wound even looked smaller, pink and puckered at the edges. The girl's face was gently composed, as if she were napping. Sarah placed her fingers at the girl's throat. A hard, regular beat met her fingertips.
"What in the world?"
"Peter, hold that lantern over here." Peter swung the lantern over the girl's face. Sarah gently peeled back the lid of her left eye, a dark, dewy orb, the disc-like pupil contracting to reveal the ribbed iris, the color of wet earth. But something was different. Something was there.
"Bring it closer."
As Peter shifted the lantern, blazing the eye with light, she felt it. A sensation like falling, as if the earth had opened under her feet. Worse than dying, worse than death. A terrible blackness all around, and she was falling, falling forever into it.
"Sarah, what's wrong?"
She was on her feet, backing away. Her heart was lurching in her chest. Her hands were shaking like leaves in the wind. Everyone was looking at her. She tried to speak, but no words came.
What had she seen?
But it wasn't something she'd seen, it was something she'd felt. Sarah thought the word. Alone.
Alone. That's what she was, what they all were. That was what her parents were, their souls falling forever in blackness. They were alone.
She became aware that others were in the ward now. Sanjay, and beside him, Sue Ramirez. Two more watchers hovered behind them. Everyone was waiting for her to say something. She could feel the heat of all their eyes upon her. Sanjay stepped forward. Will she live? She took a breath to calm herself.
I don't know.
Her voice felt weak in her throat.
It's a bad wound, Sanjay. She's lost a lot of blood.
Sanjay regarded the girl a moment. He appeared to be deciding what to think of her, how to account for her impossible presence. Then he turned toward Caleb, who was standing by the cot with the blood-soaked compress in his hands. Something seemed to harden in the air. The men at the door came forward, hands on their blades.
Come with us, Caleb.
The two men, Jimmy Molyneux and Ben Chow, grabbed the boy by the arms. He was too surprised to resist.
Sanjay, what are you doing?
Alicia said.
Sir, what the hell is this about?
It was Sanjay who answered. Caleb is under arrest.
Arrest?
The boy squealed.
What am I under arrest for?
Caleb opened the gate. He knows the law as well as anyone. Jimmy, get him out of here. Jimmy and Ben began to pull the struggling boy toward the curtain.
Leash!
He cried. She quickly blocked their way, positioning herself in front of the door.
Sue, tell them, Alicia said. It was me. I was the one who went over. If you want to arrest someone, arrest me.
Standing beside Sanjay, Sue said nothing.
Sue?
But the woman shook her head.
I can't, Leash. What do you mean you can't?
Because it isn't up to her, Sanjay said. Teacher is dead. Caleb is under arrest for murder. Chapter 27 By mid-morning, everyone in the colony knew the story of the night before, or some version of it. A walker had appeared outside the walls. Caleb had opened the gate, letting in a viral. The walker, a young girl, was in the infirmary, dying, shot by a bolt from a watcher's cross. The colonel was dead, an apparent suicide. How he'd gotten over the wall, no one knew. And Arlo, too, killed in the sanctuary by his brother. But worst of all was Teacher. They found her under the window in the big room. Hollis's line of sight had been obscured by a line of empty cots. Probably she had heard the viral coming down off the roof and tried to make a stand. A blade was in her hand. There had been many teachers, of course, but in a truer sense there had only been one. Each woman who took the job down through the years became that person. The teacher who had died that night was actually a Darryl, April Darryl. She was the woman Peter remembered laughing at his questions about the ocean, though she had been younger then, not much older than he was now, and pretty in a soft, pale way, like an older sister who was kept indoors by some physical ailment. She was the woman Sarah recalled from the morning of her release, leading her with her chain of questions, like a flight of stairs taking her down to a dark basement in which lay the terrible truth, then giving her into her mother's arms to weep over the world and what it was. It was a hard job being teacher, everyone knew that, a thankless job, to live locked away with the littles, with barely any grown-up company except for women who were pregnant or nursing, with nothing on their minds but babies. And it was also true that because teacher was the one to tell you, tell everyone, she bore the collective resentment of this trauma. Except for first night, when she might make a brief appearance in the sunspot, teacher hardly ever set foot outside the sanctuary, and when she did, it was as if she moved in an invisible container of betrayal. Peter felt sorry for her, but it was also true that he could barely bring himself to meet her eye. The household, which assembled at first light, had declared a state of civil emergency. Runners were dispatched from house to house, passing the word. Until more was known, all activities beyond the wall would be suspended. The herd would stay inside, as well as any HD crews. The gate would remain closed. Caleb had been remanded to the lockup. For the time being, it was agreed, with so many souls lost, and such fear and confusion having gripped the colony, no sentence would be passed. And then there was the question of the girl. In the early morning hours, Sanjay had led the members of the household to the infirmary to examine her. The wound to her shoulder was obviously serious. She had yet to regain consciousness. There was no sign of viral infection, but it was also the case that her appearance was completely inexplicable. Why had the virals not attacked her? How had she survived all alone in the dark? Sanjay ordered anyone who had been in contact with her to be stripped and washed, their clothing burned. The girl's backpack and clothing went into the fire as well. The girl had been placed under strict quarantine. No one but Sarah would be allowed in the infirmary until more was known. The inquest was held in an old classroom in the sanctuary, the same room, Peter realized, that Teacher had taken him to on the day of his release. An inquest. That was the term Sanjay had used, a word Peter had never heard before. It seemed to Peter that it was a fancy name for looking for someone to blame. Sanjay had instructed the four of them, Peter, Alicia, Hollis, and Sue, not to speak to one another until each had been questioned in turn. They waited outside in the hall, wedged into undersized desks shoved in a line against the wall, with a single watcher, Sanjay's nephew Ian, waiting with them. Around them the building was oddly silent. All the littles had been moved upstairs while the big room was washed down. Who knew what they would make of the night's events? What Sandy Chow, who had stepped in for Teacher, would tell them? Probably she would tell them they had simply all dreamed it. With the youngest children, that likely would do the trick. As for the older ones, Peter had no idea. Maybe they would have to be released early. Sue had been called first, emerging from the room a short time later and striding down the hall with a harried look. Hollis was then summoned inside. Unfolding his long legs from under the desk, he appeared completely devoid of energy, as if some essential piece of him had been carved away. Ian was holding the door open, eyeing the group with a look of impatient warning. At the threshold, Hollis stopped and turned to look at all of them, uttering the first words any of them had spoken in an hour. "I just want to know it wasn't for nothing." They waited. Through the door to the classroom, Peter could hear the murmur of voices. Peter wanted to ask Ian if he knew anything, but the expression on the man's face told him not to try. Ian was Theo's age, part of a group that had come up at around the same time. He and his wife Hannah had one young daughter, Kira, in the sanctuary. So, Peter thought, that explained the look on Ian's face. It was the look of a parent, a father. Hollis emerged, briefly meeting Peter's eyes and giving him a curt nod before retreating down the hall. Peter began to rise, but Ian said, "Not you, Jackson. Leash is next." Jackson? Since when did anybody call him Jackson? Especially someone on the watch. And why did it sound suddenly different to him, coming from Ian's mouth? "It's all right," Leash said, and got to her feet wearily. He had never seen her looking so defeated. "I just want to get this over with." Then she was gone, leaving Peter and Ian alone. Ian had awkwardly fixed his gaze on the square of wall above Peter's head. It really wasn't her fault, Ian. It wasn't anybody's. Ian stiffened but said nothing. "If you'd been there, you might have done the same thing. Look, save it for Sanjay. I'm not supposed to talk to you." By the time Leash appeared, Peter had actually managed to doze off. She stepped from the room with a wordless look he knew. "I'll find you." Peter felt it the moment he stepped into the room. Whatever was going to happen had already been decided. His appearance, whatever he had to say for himself, would make very little difference. Sue had been asked to recuse herself from the proceedings, leaving only 5 members of the household in attendance. Sanjay, who was seated at the center of a long table, and on either side of him, old Chow, Jimmy Molyneux, Walter Fisher and Peter's cousin Dana occupying the Jackson seat. He noted the odd number. Sue's absence had effectively prevented any kind of deadlock. An empty desk had been positioned to face the table. The tension in the room was palpable. No one was speaking. Only old Chow seemed willing to meet Peter's eye. Everyone else was looking away, even Dana. Slumped in his chair, Walter Fisher seemed hardly to know where he was, or to care. His clothing seemed unusually filthy and rumpled. Peter could actually smell the shine coming off him.
"Have a seat, Peter," Sanjay said.
"I'd rather stand, if that's all right." He felt the small pleasure of defiance, a point being scored. But Sanjay did not react.
"I suppose we should get on with it."
He cleared his throat before continuing. "Though there is some confusion on this point, the general opinion of the household, based in large part on what Caleb has told us, is that you were not responsible for opening the gate, that this was his doing entirely. Is this your version?"
"My version?"
"Yes, Peter," Sanjay said. He sighed with unconcealed impatience. "Your version of events, what you believe occurred."
"I don't believe anything."
"What did Hightop tell you?" Old Chow held up a hand and leaned forward.
"Sanjay, if I may."
Sanjay frowned but said nothing. Old Chow leaned forward over the table, a gesture of command. He had a soft, wrinkled face and damp eyes that gave him an appearance of absolute earnestness. He had been head of the household for many years before yielding the position to Theo's father, a history that still gave him considerable authority if he cared to use it. For the most part, he didn't. After his first wife had been killed on Dark Knight, he had taken a second, much younger wife, and now passed most of his days in the apiary among the bees he loved.
"Peter, no one doubts that Caleb thought he was doing the right thing. Intention is not the issue here. Did you open the gate or not?"
"What are you going to do with him?"
"That hasn't been decided. Please answer the question."
Peter tried to meet Dana's eye but couldn't. She was still looking at the table.
"I would have, if I'd gotten there first."
Sanjay gave an indignant lift in his chair.
"You see, this is what I'm saying."
But old Chow paid this interruption no mind, keeping his eyes locked on Peter's face.
"So am I correct in understanding that your answer is no? You would have, but in fact you did not."
He folded his hands on the table. "Take a moment to think if you need to." It seemed to Peter that old Chow was trying to protect him. But saying what had happened would shift all the blame to Caleb, who had simply done what Peter himself would have if he'd gotten to the wheelhouse first.
"No one doubts your loyalty to your friends," old Chow went on. "I would expect nothing less from you. But the greater loyalty here must be to the safety of everyone. I'll ask you again. Did you help Caleb in opening the gate? Or did you, in fact, try to close it once you saw what was happening?"
Peter had the feeling of standing at the edge of a great abyss. Whatever he said next would be final. But the truth was all he had. He shook his head.
"No."
"No what?" He took a long breath.
"No, I didn't open the gate."
Old Chow visibly relaxed.
"Thank you, Peter."
His gaze passed over the group. "If nobody has anything else..." "Wait," Sanjay cut in. Peter felt the air in the room tighten. Even Walter seemed suddenly alert.
"Here it comes," thought Peter. "Everyone here knows of your friendship with Alicia," Sanjay said. "She is someone who confides in you. Would that be fair to say?"
Peter nodded warily.
"I guess."
"Has she in any way indicated to you that she knows this girl?" Has seen her before, perhaps? A knot tightened in his stomach. Why would you think that? Sanjay glanced at the others before returning his eyes to the front of the room. There is a question, you see, of coincidence. You three were the last to return from the power station. And the story you tell, first about Xander and then Theo. Well, you must admit it's pretty strange. The anger Peter had been holding in check gave way. You think we planned this? I lost my brother down there. We were lucky to get back alive. The room had grown very quiet again. Even Dana was looking at Peter with frank suspicion. So, for the record, Sanjay said, are you saying you don't know the Walker? You've never seen her before? Suddenly it wasn't about Alicia, he realized. The question was about him. I have no idea who she is, he said. Sanjay held his eyes on Peter's face for what seemed like an unnaturally long moment. Then he nodded. Thank you, Peter. We appreciate your candor. You're free to go. Just like that, it was over. That's all? Sanjay had already busied himself with the papers before him. He looked up, frowning, as if surprised to find Peter still in the room. Yes, for now. You're not going to do anything to me? Sanjay shrugged. His mind had already moved on. What do you want us to do? Peter felt an unexpected disappointment. Sitting outside with Alicia and Hollis, he'd felt a bond, a shared stake in the outcome. Whatever was going to happen would happen to them all. Now they had been separated. If it happened as you say, you're not to blame. The blame is Caleb's. Sue has said, and Jimmy agrees, that the stress of standing for your brother could be considered a factor here. Take a few more days before returning to the catwalk. After that, we'll see. What about the others? Sanjay hesitated. I suppose there's no reason not to tell you, since everyone will know soon enough. Sue Ramirez has offered her resignation as first captain, which the household has with reluctance agreed to accept. But she was out of position when the attack occurred and shares some of the blame. Jimmy will serve as new first captain. As for Hollis, he's off the wall for the time being. He can return when he's ready. And Leash? Alicia has been ordered to stand down from the watch. She's been reassigned to heavy duty. Of everything that had happened, this development was actually the most difficult for him to process. Alicia as a wrench. It was simply beyond Peter's power to imagine such a thing. You're joking. Sanjay gave a correcting lift of his generous eyebrows. No, Peter. I promise you, I am not joking. Peter exchanged a quick glance with Dana. Did you know anything about this? Her eyes said she did. Now, if that's all, Sanjay said. Peter stepped toward the door, but as he reached the threshold, a sudden doubt occurred to him. He turned to face the group once more. What about the power station? Sanjay heaved a weary sigh. What about it, Peter? If Arlo's dead, shouldn't we be sending someone down there? Peter's first impression, considering the startled looks on everyone's faces, was that he'd somehow implicated himself at the last second. But then he understood. They had failed to consider this. You didn't send somebody down there at first light? Sanjay swiveled toward Jimmy, who shrugged nervously, evidently caught short. It's too late now, he said quietly. They'd never make it before dark. We'll have to wait till tomorrow. Flyers, Jimmy. Look, I just missed it, all right? There was a lot going on.
And Finn and Ray could still be all right.
Sanjay seemed to take a moment just to breathe, composing himself. But Peter could tell he was furious.
Thank you, Peter. We'll take this under advisement.
There was nothing more to say. Peter stepped from the room into the hall. Ian was just where he'd left him, leaning against the wall with his arms folded across his chest.
I guess you heard about Leash, huh?
I heard.
Ian shrugged. The stiffness had gone out of him.
Look, I know she's your friend. But you can't say she didn't have it coming. Going over like she did.
What about the girl? Ian startled, a blaze of anger in his eyes.
Flyers, what about her? I've got a kid, Peter. What do I care about some walker?
Peter said nothing. As far as he could see, Ian had every reason to be angry.
You're right, he said finally. It was stupid.
But Ian's expression softened then.
Look, he said. People are just upset is all.
I'm sorry I got mad.
Nobody thinks it's your fault.
But it was, Peter thought. It was. The answer had come to Michael just after dawn. 1,432 megahertz.
Of course.
The bandwidth was officially unassigned because it really had been assigned to the military. A short-range digital signal cycling every 90 minutes looking for its mainframe. And all night long, the signal had been growing stronger. It was practically on their doorstep. The encryption would be the easy part. The trick would be finding the handshake, broadcasting the one reply that would cause the signal's transmitter, wherever and whatever it was, to link up with the mainframe. Once he did this, the rest would be just a question of uploading the data. So what was the signal looking for? What was the digital answer to the question it was posing every 90 minutes? Something Elton had said just before he'd gone to bed. Someone's calling us. That was when he'd figured it out. He knew just what he needed. The lighthouse was full of all kinds of crap, stored in bins on the shelves. There was at least one army handheld that he knew of. They had some old lithium cells that could still hold a charge. Not more than a few minutes worth, but that was all he'd need. He worked quickly, keeping an eye on the clock, waiting for the next 90-minute interval to pass so he could grab the signal. Dimly, he sensed some kind of commotion going on outside, but who knew what that was? He could jack the handheld into the computer, snatch the signal as it came in, capture its embedded ID, and program the handheld from the panel. Elton was asleep, snoring on his cratered cot in the back of the lighthouse. Flyers, if the old man didn't take a bath soon, Michael didn't know what he'd do. The whole place stank like socks. By the time he was through, it was almost half day. How long had he been working, barely rising from his chair? After that whole thing with Masami, he'd been too restless to sleep and returned to the hut. That might have been 10 hours ago. His ass felt like he'd been sitting that long at least. He really had to pee. He stepped from the hut, too quickly, unprepared for the blast of daylight that filled his eyes.
Michael!
Jacob Curtis, Gabe's boy. Michael saw him jogging up the path with a lumbering gait, waving his arms. Michael took a breath to prepare himself. It was hardly the boy's fault, but talking to Jacob could be a trial. Before Gabe had gotten sick, he would sometimes bring Jacob around the lighthouse, asking Michael if he could find something for the boy to do to make himself useful. Michael had done his best, but there really wasn't much Jacob could understand. Whole days could be swallowed up by explaining the simplest tasks to him. He came to a halt before Michael, dropping his hands to his knees and heaving for breath. Despite his size, his movements possessed a childlike disorderliness, the parts never quite seeming in sync.
Michael,
he gulped.
Michael!
Easy, Jacob. Slow down. The boy was flapping a hand before his face, as if to push more oxygen into his lungs. Michael couldn't tell if he was upset or simply excited.
"I want to see Sarah," he gasped.
Michael told him she wasn't there. "Did you try at the house?"
"She's not there either."
Jacob lifted his face. His eyes were very wide.
"I saw her, Michael."
"I thought you said you couldn't find her."
"Not her. The other one. I was sleeping and I saw her."
Jacob didn't always make perfect sense, but Michael had never seen the boy like this. His face wore a look of complete panic. "Did something happen to your dad, Jacob? Is he okay?" A frown creased the boy's damp face.
"Oh, he died."
"Gabe's dead?"
Jacob's tone was disturbingly matter-of-fact. He might have been telling Michael what the weather was.
"He died, and he won't wake up anymore."
"Flyers, Jacob. I'm sorry."
That was when Michael saw Mar hurrying down the path. He felt a gush of relief.
"Jacob, where have you been?"
The woman stopped before them.
"How many times do I have to tell you? You can't run off like that. You can't."
The boy backed away, his long arms flailing.
"I have to find Sarah."
"Jacob!"
Her voice seemed to hit him like an arrow. He froze where he stood, though his face was still animated by a strange, unknowable dread. His mouth was open and he was breathing fast. Mar moved toward him cautiously, as if she were approaching some large, unpredictable animal.
"Jacob, look at me."
"Mama."
"Hush now. No more talk. Look at me."
She reached up to his face, placing a hand on each of his cheeks, focusing her eyes on his face.
"I saw her, Mama."
"I know you did. But it was just a dream, Jacob, that's all. Don't you remember? We went back to the house, and I put you to bed, and you were sleeping."
"I was?"
"Yes, honey, you were. It was nothing. Just a dream."
Jacob was breathing more easily now, his body stilling beneath his mother's touch.
"I want you to go home now and wait for me there. No more looking for Sarah. Can you do that for me?"
"But Mama..."
"No buts, Jacob. Can you do as I ask?"
Reluctantly, Jacob nodded.
"That's my good boy."
Mar stepped back, releasing him.
"Straight home now."
The boy looked at Michael once, a quick, furtive glance, and jogged away. Finally, Mar turned to Michael.
"It always works when it gets like this,"
she said with a weary shrug.
"It's the only thing that does." "I heard about Gabe,"
he managed.
"I'm sorry."
Mar's eyes looked as if she had cried so much there were no tears left in her at all.
"Thank you, Michael.
I think Jacob wanted to see Sarah because she was there at the end.
She was a good friend.
To all of us."
Mar halted a moment, a look of pain skittering across her face. But she shook her head as if to ward this thought away.
"If you can get her a message, tell her we're all thinking of her. I don't think I had a chance to properly thank her. Will you do that?"
"I'm sure she's around here someplace. Did you check the infirmary?"
"Of course she's in the infirmary. That was the first place Jacob went."
"I don't understand. If Sarah's in the infirmary, why didn't he find her?" Mar was looking at him strangely.
"Because of the quarantine, of course."
"Quarantine?" Mar's face fell.
"Michael, where have you been?"
Chapter 28. Alicia didn't find him after all. It was the other way around. Peter knew just where she'd be. She was sitting in a wedge of shade outside the colonel's hut, her back braced against a stack of wood, knees pulled to her chest. At the sound of Peter's approach, she looked up, wiping her eyes with the back of her hand.
"Oh, damn. Damn," she said.
He took a seat beside her on the ground. It's okay. Alicia sighed bitterly.
No, it isn't. You tell anyone you saw me like this, I will blade you, Peter.
They sat in silence for a while. The day was cloudy, cast with a pale and smoky light, carrying with it a strong, acrid odor. The body detail, burning the corpses outside the wall.
You know, I always wondered something, Peter said. Why did we call him the Colonel?
Because that was his name. He didn't have another one.
Why do you think he went out there?
He didn't seem like the type.
To, you know, let it go like that.
But Alicia didn't respond. Her relationship with the Colonel was something she rarely spoke of, and never in detail. It was a region of her life, perhaps the one region that she withheld from Peter's view. And yet its presence was something he was always aware of. He did not believe she thought of the Colonel as a father. Peter had never detected any trace of that kind of warmth between them. On those rare occasions when his name arose or he appeared on the catwalk at night, Peter felt a rigidity come into her, a cold distance. It was nothing overt, and probably he was the only person who would have noticed. But whatever the Colonel had been to her, their bond was a fact. He understood that her tears were for him.
Can you believe it? Alicia said miserably. They fired me.
Sanjay will come around. He's not stupid. It's a mistake. He'll figure it out. But Alicia seemed to be barely listening.
No. Sanjay's right. I never should have gone over the wall the way I did. I totally lost my head seeing the girl out there.
She shook her head hopelessly.
Not that it matters now. You saw that wound.
The girl, Peter thought. He'd never learned anything about her. Who was she? How had she survived? Were there others like her? How had she gotten away from the virals? But now it looked as if she would die, taking the answers with her.
You had to try. I think you did the right thing. Caleb, too. You know, Sanjay's actually thinking of putting him out. Putting out Hightop, for God's sakes.
To be put out. It was the worst fate imaginable.
That can't be right. I'm serious, Peter. I promise you, they're talking about it right now.
The others would never stand for it.
Since when do they really have a say about anything? You were in that room. People are scared. Somebody's got to take the blame for Teacher's death. Caleb's all alone. He's easy.
Peter drew a breath and held it.
Look, I know Sanjay. He can be pretty full of himself, but I really don't think he's like that. And everybody likes Caleb. Everybody liked Arlo. Everybody liked your brother. That doesn't mean the story won't end badly.
You're beginning to sound like Theo.
Maybe so.
She was gazing ahead, squinting into the light.
All I know is, Caleb saved me last night. Sanjay thinks he's gonna put him out, he's gonna have to deal with me.
Leash. He paused. Be careful. Think about what you're saying.
I have thought about it. Nobody's putting him out.
You know I'm on your side.
You may not want to be.
Around them, the colony was eerily quiet, everyone still stunned by the events of the early hours of the morning. Peter wondered if this was the silence that came after something or before. If it was the silence of blame being tallied. Alicia wasn't wrong. People were frightened.
About the girl, Peter said. There's something I should have told you.
The lockup was an old public bathroom in the trailer park on the east side of town. As they made their approach, Peter and Alicia heard a swell of voices on the air. They picked up the pace as they moved through the maze of tipping hulks. Most had long since been stripped for parts, and arrived to find a small crowd at the entrance, About a dozen men and women gathered tightly around a single watcher, Dale Levine.
"What the hell is going on?"
Peter whispered. Alicia's face was grim.
"It started," she said. "That's what."
Dale was not a small man, but at that moment he seemed so. Facing the crowd, he looked like a cornered animal. He was a little hard of hearing and had a habit of turning his head slightly to the right in order to point his good ear at whoever was talking to him, giving him a slightly distracted air. But he didn't seem distracted now.
"I'm sorry, Sam," Dale was saying. "I don't know anything you don't."
The person he was addressing was Sam Chow, old Chow's nephew, a thoroughly unassuming man whom Peter had heard speak only a few times in his life. His wife was Other Sandy. Between them they had 5 children, 3 in the sanctuary. As Peter and Alicia moved to the edge of the group, he realized what he was seeing. These were parents. Just like Ian, everyone standing outside the lockup had a child, or more than one. Patrick and Emily Phillips, Hod and Lisa Greenberg, Grace Molyneux and Belle Ramirez and Hannah Fisher-Patal.
"That boy opened the gate."
"So what do you want me to do about it?
Ask your uncle if you want to know more."
Sam pointed his voice to the high windows of the lockup.
"Do you hear me, Caleb Jones? We all know what you did."
"Come on, Sam. Leave the poor kid alone."
Another man moved forward. Milo Darrell. Like his brother, Finn, Milo was a wrench, with a wrench's solid build and taciturn demeanor. Tall and sloped-shouldered, with a woolly beard and unkempt hair that fell in a tangle to his eyes. Behind him, dwarfed by his height, was his wife Penny.
"You've got a kid too, Dale," Milo said. "How can you just stand there?"
One of the 3 J's, Peter realized. Little June Levine. Dale's face, Peter saw, had gone a little white.
"You think I don't know that?"
Whatever wedge of authority had separated him from the crowd was dissolving.
"And I'm not just standing here. Let the household handle this." "He should be put out."
The voice, a woman's, had risen from the center of the crowd. It was Belle Ramirez, Ray's wife. Their little girl was Jane. Peter saw that the woman's hands were trembling. She looked close to tears. Sam moved toward her and put his arm around her shoulder.
"You see, Dale? You see what that boy did?"
Which was the moment Alicia shouldered her way through the crowd. Without looking at Belle or anyone at all, she stepped up to Dale, who was gazing at the stricken Belle with an expression of utter helplessness.
"Dale, hand me your cross."
"Leash, I can't do that. Jimmy says so."
"I don't care. Just give it to me."
She didn't wait, but snatched it away. Alicia turned to face everyone, holding the cross loosely at her side. A deliberately unthreatening posture, but Alicia was Alicia. Her standing there meant something.
"Everyone, I know you're upset, and if you ask me, you have a right to be. But Caleb Jones is one of us, as much as any of you."
"That's easy for you to say."
Milo was standing with Sam and Belle now.
"You were the one outside."
A murmur of agreement flickered through the crowd. Alicia eyed at the man coolly, allowing the moment to pass.
"You have a point there, Milo.
If not for Hightop, I'd be dead. So if you were maybe thinking about doing something to him, I'd think long and hard."
"What are you going to do?"
Sam sneered. "Stick us all with that cross?"
"No."
Alicia frowned, not seriously.
"Just you, Sam.
I thought I'd take Milo here on the blade."
A nervous laugh from the few of the men, but it just as quickly died. Milo had taken a step back. Peter, still at the edge of the crowd, realized his hand had dropped to his blade. Everything seemed to depend on what would happen next.
"I think you're bluffing,"
Sam said, his eyes held tightly on Alicia's face.
"Is that so?
You must not know me very well."
"The household will put him out. You wait and see."
You could be right. But that's not for either of us to decide. Nothing's happening here except you upsetting a lot of people for no reason. I won't have it. The crowd had grown suddenly silent. Peter felt their uncertainty. The momentum had shifted. Except for Sam, and maybe Milo, their anger had no weight. They were simply afraid.
She's right, Sam, Milo said. Let's get out of here.
Sam's eyes, burning with righteous anger, were still locked on Alicia's face. The cross had yet to move from Alicia's side, but it didn't have to. Peter, standing behind the two men, still had his hand on his blade. Everyone else had moved away.
Sam, Dale said, finding his voice again. Please, just go home.
Milo reached for Sam then, meaning to take him by the elbow. But Sam jerked his arm away. He appeared rattled, as if the touch of Milo's hand had nudged him from a trance.
All right, I'm coming.
It wasn't until the two men had disappeared into the maze of trailers that Peter allowed himself to expel the breath of air he realized he'd been holding in his chest. Just a day ago, he never would have imagined that such a thing was possible, that fear could turn these people, people he knew, who did their work and went about their lives and visited their children in the sanctuary, into an angry mob. And Sam Chow. He'd never seen the man so angry. He'd never seen him angry at all.
What the hell, Dale? Alicia said. When did this start?
About as soon as they moved Caleb over here. Now that they were alone, the full magnitude of what had occurred, or almost occurred, could be read in Dale's face. He looked like a man who had fallen from a great height only to discover that he was miraculously uninjured.
Flyers, I thought I was going to have to let them in.
You should have heard the things they were saying before you got here. From inside the lockup came the sound of Caleb's voice.
Leash, is that you?
Alicia pointed her voice to the windows.
Just hang tight, Hightop.
She fixed her eyes on Dale again.
Go and get some other watchers. I don't know what Jimmy was thinking, but you need at least three out here. Peter and I can stand guard till you get back.
Leash, you know I can't leave you here.
Sanjay will have my ass. You're not even watch anymore.
Maybe not, but Peter is. And since when did you start taking orders from Sanjay?
Since this morning. He gave them a puzzled look.
Jimmy says so.
Sanjay declared a... what do you call it? A civil emergency.
We know all about that. That doesn't mean Sanjay gives the orders.
You better tell Jimmy. He seems to think so. Galen, too.
Galen? What does Galen have to do with anything?
You haven't heard? Dale scanned their faces quickly.
I guess you wouldn't have.
Galen's second captain now.
Galen Strauss?
Dale shrugged.
It doesn't make sense to me either. Jimmy just called everyone together and told us Galen had your slot and Ian has Theo's.
What about Jimmy's?
If he's moved up to first captain now, who has his slot at second?
Ben Chow?
Ben and Ian. It made sense. Both were in line for second. But Galen?
Give me the key, Alicia said.
Go get two more watchers. No captains. Find Sue if you can and tell her what I told you.
I don't know who that leaves.
I mean it, Dale, Alicia said. Just go.
They opened the lockup and stepped inside. The room was barren, a featureless concrete box. Old toilet stalls, long since emptied of their fixtures, stood along one wall. Facing these was a line of pipes, and above it a long mirror, fogged with tiny cracks. Caleb was sitting on the floor under the windows. They'd left him a jug of water and a bucket, but that was all. Leash balanced her cross against one of the stalls and crouched before him.
Are they gone?
Alicia nodded. Peter could see how frightened the boy was. He looked like he'd been crying.
I'm so screwed, Leash. Sanjay's going to put me out for sure.
That's not going to happen,
I promise you. He wiped his runny nose with the back of a hand. His face and hands were filthy, his nails encrusted with grime.
What can you do?
Let me worry about that. She drew a blade off her belt.
You know how to use this? Flyer's leash? What am I going to do with a blade?
Just in case. Do you?
I can whittle some. I'm not very good.
She pressed it into his hand. Put it out of sight.
Leash, Peter said quietly. You think that's such a good idea?
I'm not leaving him unarmed. She fixed her eyes on Caleb again. You just hold tight and be ready. Anything happens and you have a chance to get away, don't hesitate. You run like hell for the cutout. There's cover there. I'll find you.
Why there?
They heard voices outside. It'll take too long to explain. Are we clear? Dale stepped back into the room, a single watcher trailing behind him, Sunny Greenberg. She was just 16, a runner. Not even a season on the walls.
Leash, I'm not fooling, Dale said. You have to get out of here.
Relax. We're leaving. But when Alicia rose to her feet and saw Sunny standing in the doorway, she stopped. Her eyes flashed with anger.
This is the best you could do. A runner?
Everybody else is on the wall. 12 hours ago, Peter realized, Alicia could have gotten anyone she wanted. A full detail. Now she had to beg for scraps.
What about Sue? Alicia pressed. Did you see her?
I don't know where she is. She's probably up there too. Dale's eyes darted to Peter.
Will you just get her out of here?
Sonny, who so far had said nothing, moved farther into the room.
Dale, what are you doing? I thought you said Jimmy ordered another guard. Why are you taking orders from her?
Leash was just helping out.
Dale, she's not a captain. She's not even a watch.
The girl acknowledged Alicia with a quick, faintly embarrassed shrug.
No offense to you, Leash.
None taken. Alicia gestured toward the cross the girl was holding at her side.
Tell me something.
You any good with that thing? A falsely modest shrug.
Highest scores in my grade?
Well, I hope that's true. Because it looks like you just got promoted. Alicia turned to Caleb again.
You'll be all right in here?
The boy nodded.
Just remember what I told you. I won't be far.
And with that, Alicia looked at Dale and Sonny one last time, using her eyes to communicate her meaning.
Make no mistake. This is personal.
And led Peter from the lockup.